This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Zimbabwean police fired shots into the air and used water cannon and tear gas in downtown Harare to disperse an anti-government protest Wednesday. Protesters looted a shop belonging to the country's vice president, while some, including a journalist, were assaulted by police.
That's Sebastian Monfu reporting from Harare. Details next. Also, two rural hospitals in Mozambique are attacked by opposition fighters, effectively cutting off medical care to tens of thousands of people. And the chairman of the National Dialogue Commission in Burundi supports the removal of term limits. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Zimbabwean police fired shots into the air and used water cannon and tear gas in downtown Harare to disperse an anti-government protest today. Protesters looted a shop belonging to the country's vice president, while some people, including a journalist, were assaulted by police. Sebastian Mumfu has more from Harare.
That is the siren of a water cannon vehicle wailing as Zimbabwean police tried to break up a protest calling for the resignation of President Robert Mugabe. The demonstrators accused the 92-year-old leader of ruining Zimbabwe's economy and disregarding human rights. They clashed with police and refused to disperse until officers fired gunshots into the air. Harrison Nkomo of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights condemned the government's use of force.
Instead of using force, it must just do the right thing. The government must sort out infrastructure. Look at the condition of the roads. Look at the condition of the rail. When did we last have government building dams? There's total collapse of infrastructure. They must fix jobs. How do you have graduates playing football in the streets? Because they are totally unemployed. How do you have the industrial site resembling the sign of a funeral parlor? It's so pathetic. And they need to sort out corruption.
Western nations have long condemned Mugabe for allegedly rigging elections, suppressing the opposition, and driving Zimbabwe's economy into the ground with his policies. Mugabe has held on to power for 36 years since the country won its independence from Britain. Since last month, however, Zimbabwe has witnessed a rarely seen wave of protests against him. The Wednesday demonstration was organized by the youth of the opposition under the banner My Zimbabwe. Opposition parties are expected to hold protests Friday, demanding that Mugabe fix the moribund economy. The country's unemployment rate is estimated to be above 85%, and for months the government has failed to pay its workers on time. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Opposition fighters in Mozambique have attacked at least two rural hospitals in the past month, stealing supplies and effectively cutting off medical care to tens of thousands of people. The attacks appear to be fallout from failed peace talks between the country's long-ruling Frelimo party and its longtime rival, RENAMO. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
As many as 100,000 rural Mozambicans appear to be paying the price for the nation's stalled peace talks after attacks on health facilities in the towns of Morumbala and Mopeya, both in central Mozambique. Human Rights Watch said Wednesday armed men linked to the main opposition party, RENAMO, stormed the emergency rooms, threatened patients and staff, and seized basic hospital supplies. RENAMO did not confirm or deny responsibility for these attacks. But the party's leader has recently ordered attacks across the country amid stalled peace talks with the ruling Frelimo party. The attackers' take reportedly included bed sheets, mosquito nets, HIV tests, antibiotics, syringes, vaccines, and essential supplies used to deliver babies. The rights watchdog says they also received reports of other hospital and clinic attacks, but could not confirm those incidents. Human Rights Watch's Mozambique researcher, Zenaida Machad, paused when asked, why attack a hospital?
Well, that's a good question for you to ask them. Well, in our opinion, those raids have such a repugnant strategy, and the only thing they can do is to damage health facilities, loot medicines, and prevent people in remote areas who much need health care from accessing the hospital and medical treatment.
The rights group has called for fighters to immediately cease such attacks, calling that demand non-negotiable. Renamo and Frelimo have been negotiating to reach a deal that will persuade Renamo to lay down its weapons for good. The two parties originally opposed each other as armed groups in a bruising civil war. The two forged a peace deal when that war ended in 1992, but the deal has broken down in recent years, especially after Renamo refused to accept Frelimo's victory in the 2014 national elections. Renamo's leader, Afonso Jalcama, has often resorted to threats and violence, as he did after the election. When it appeared that talks would fail, he ordered more attacks and called them a military strategy. Observers have noted other small-scale attacks on public facilities like police stations in the past month in central Mozambique. Analyst Nelson Alusala of the Institute for Security Studies says he does not see the coastal nation returning to full-on war. But, he says, unless the two sides forge a deal that includes disarmament and guarantees from international mediators, this low-level violence may continue.
What you are seeing, attacks on civilians, attacks on public facilities, attacks on the main highways leading between the north and south, passing through central Mozambique, are reminiscent of the conflict that will continue for a while until that conflict has a sustainable resolution to it.
But that would require compromise, which is one thing Jalcama appears uninterested in. In a recent interview with local media, he rejected the idea of being appointed as vice president in a power-sharing government, saying it is impossible to work with Frelimo. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
In Burundi, the chairman of the National Dialogue Commission supports the removal of presidential term limits. The topic became a source of political violence over a year ago when President Pierre Nkurunziza said he was running for another term. His opponent said he'd already served a second term as allowed by the Constitution. From Bujumbura, Moses Havyarimana reports.
Article 96 of Burundi's constitution says the president who is elected directly by the voters can serve 2 5-year terms. Term limits are also part of the Arusha Accord, which ended the country's long civil war. The president has been serving for 11 years, but he says he was only elected directly by the people in 2010 and 2015. In 2005, he was elected by the National Assembly, which Nkurunziza says does not count as a constitutional term. Justin Zoisaba, the chairman of the commission, trying to bring peace between the government and its opponents. He says Burundians are opposed to term limits.
On the constitution, the vast majority of dialogue participants want the president of the republic to exercise more than two terms. People, they said that they have to erase the term limit. It means that the president can go for any time he wants.
Zoisaba says that Burundians also want the Arusha Agreement to be changed to provide equal rights for all citizens. According to the commission report, the Arusha Agreement contained errors regarding quotas governing the participation in politics of the country's main ethnic groups.
The quotas, 60% of Hutus, 40% of Tutsi, and they have forgotten Twa. That is an error. Another example is, you see, if you continue to say 60%, 40%, shall we remain in that all the time? Is another question.
The Inter-Burundi Dialogue Commission was formed by President Pierre Nkurunziza last year to engage all Burundians in the effort to end political crisis. But critics say the talks are not inclusive because the commission was formed by the president himself and many opposition groups are not included. The commission acknowledges that it hasn't yet sought the views of Burundians who are outside the country but has reached the majority of citizens in the country. The commission will submit its findings to the parliament from where it will be approved and then given to President Nkurunziza, who will decide how to react to the recommendation. The ruling party and supporters of the government control the parliament and are not likely to challenge any of the findings of the report. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Sixteen past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. French police say a Sudanese migrant has died in a fight between groups of Sudanese and Afghans in the port city of Calais. The Associated Press says the man was stabbed. Four other people had minor injuries. The Sudanese man was the 11th migrant to die in Calais this year. Most lost their lives while trying to illegally cross the English Channel to Britain. There are about 7,000 migrants in Calais. They live in a camp often described as filthy. Part of the camp was closed earlier this year. Elsewhere, Serbian officials say a 20-year-old Afghan migrant was shot dead after crossing the border from Bulgaria. They say he was apparently shot by a hunter by mistake. And media reports say migrants and refugees have found a new way to enter Germany now that the Balkans route into southern Germany has been closed. There's been a sharp increase in border crossings from Poland. Many are apparently asylum seekers from Chechnya. Police in Burundi reportedly arrested eight people Saturday for allegedly circulating defamatory anti-government statements on social media. The Burundi case is not unique. The list of African countries trying to control or control social media keeps growing, in particular during elections or periods of unrest. From Nairobi, Jill Craig has the story.
Henry Mina, East Africa Director for Article 19, an organization that advocates for freedom of expression, says governments in the region are still wary of dissent.
So that's one big challenge, not fully incorporating democratic principles where people would debate and differ in opinion without necessarily being seen to be undermining national security or public interest.
In Ethiopia, no stranger to restrictions on press freedom, authorities began periodically shutting down access to social media in the Oromia region in March as a response to ongoing protests. In July, Ethiopia blocked social media after university entrance exams were leaked online. Zimbabwe has used a 2002 law against insulting the president to arrest people for statements made online. Since July, anti-government activists in Zimbabwe have been using the hashtags ThisFlag and Tajamuka to mobilize for demonstrations. The government has branded them as cyber terrorists and drafted new legislation to limit this kind of activity. Angola created the Angolan Social Communications Regulatory Body, run by the ruling party, to ensure adherence to new media laws. Meanwhile, across the continent, Mali blocked social media in Bamako this month following the arrest of a popular radio journalist, which led to violent protests in which several people were reported killed. Those are just a few recent examples. Minus says that other countries may be taking a more subtle approach.
Do not rule out situations where Kenya uses filtering. So you have cases of internet slowdown totally, where during certain periods, during our election period in 2013 or during the Garissa terrorist attack, when you just notice that the internet is slower. And that's a different system of just interference, even though it's not as bad as shutdowns.
Adjoa Animadu, an Africa research associate at London-based Chatham House, says that these crackdowns are affecting specific segments of the population.
It is still, we're still in a situation where internet penetration is relatively low in Africa, across Africa. So you have to think about the kinds of people who are most engaged with social media in a lot of these countries. And in a lot of these places, it's the middle class and it's the younger parts of the population.
Uganda blocked access to social media platforms during its February elections, and then again for the inauguration of its longtime president, Yoweri Museveni. But many Ugandans were able to get around it with VPN, or virtual private network software. John Mbaku, a non-resident senior fellow at the Washington-based Brookings Institution, argues that restricting social media can backfire.
It is important that governments give people an opportunity to be able to express themselves so that they wouldn't, those people who are frustrated with the government for one thing or the other would not end up resorting to violence as a way to express themselves.
Governments are also believed to be doing more surveillance of mobile and internet communications, couched in national security laws.
Not all of them, but some of these governments are using those anti-terrorism laws to spy on citizens and gather information that doesn't really help them fight terrorism, but help them control the population so that they can continue to perpetrate themselves in government indefinitely.
In a report last year, Privacy International detailed the use of spyware by police and military in Uganda to covertly monitor leading opposition members, activists, elected officials, intelligence insiders, and journalists following the 2011 election. The government denied the allegations and refused to open a parliamentary investigation into the matter. A recent Associated Press report highlighted increased surveillance in South Sudan, noting an interview with a jailed activist who said his interrogators played recordings of him and intercepted phone conversations and showed him emails he had sent. A government spokesman declined to discuss the issue. Animadu says efforts to stop dissent online may ultimately prove futile.
The unique thing about technology and social media is it's constantly evolving. And I'm sure that as ways of shutting down social media evolves, so will ways of getting around those kind of shutdowns.
According to the International Telecommunication Union, just 9.5% of the 940 million people living in the world's least developed countries use the internet. But things are changing fast in Africa. The number of smartphone connections on the continent has doubled in the past 2 years, according to a 2016 report by GSMA Intelligence, which specializes in global mobile operator analysis. And mobile broadband connections are expected to triple from 2015 to 2020. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
A young South African has been taking tourists on historic bicycle tours around one of Johannesburg's roughest areas, and business is booming. Darren Taylor files from Johannesburg.
The streets of Alexandra, a sprawl of shacks in the middle of Johannesburg. As a teenager here, Jeffrey Mulaudzi dreamed of owning a bicycle, but his single mother, a domestic worker, couldn't afford to buy him one.
I was arrested for stealing a bike. Luckily, I was released earlier than most of my friends.
He dedicated himself to his schooling. In 2009, one of his teachers asked Mulaudzi for a visit to Alexandra.
He always wanted to step out of his car. So I had two, of course, stolen bicycles that I had with me. I offered him one, I took one. We went around the township and we enjoyed, we had fun. And the next day he said, Jeff, is it possible that we can bring my friends for a tour? We have beers and drink and just have fun in Alexandra. And we did exactly that and they enjoyed a lot.
Mulaudzi, now 24, and three German visitors pedaled their bicycles down a dusty, potholed street in Alexandra. His experience with his teacher sparked the idea for his business. In 2010, Mulaudzi began taking tourists on bike tours to landmarks in Alexandra, like the house Nelson Mandela lived in as a law student in the early 1940s.
To be exact, that was the best salary ever. It was more salary in a day than my mother will earn in a month.
From two stolen bicycles, he now has a fleet of 65 mountain bikes. Mulaudzi laughs and says he now spends too much time repairing bicycles. He also employs five guides.
When you are in a township, a very informal place in Johannesburg, with a car, people tend to view you as you are in a zoo, you know. So we then encourage people to hop on into a bike, then you can cover a lot of distance, but you can still communicate with the community and be part of the community.
Patience. Residents welcome Mulaudzi and thank him for showing visitors the township's positive side. He says crime does happen in Alexandra, but more often than not, it's a safe place.
Do you hear gunshot?
One of his recent clients was a German, Peter Lehmann.
I felt quite unsafe because you hear so much about Johannesburg and crime and stuff. You get the feeling where it is safe and where it could be unsafe, but I had never experienced an unsafe situation.
A speeding minibus taxi hoots at Lehmann, who responds with the ring of his bicycle bell.
It's a bit more racing here than driving, but it's fun. Yeah.
Mulaudzi shows clients taverns, food stalls, barber shops. His mission, he says, is to allow visitors to interact with the people of Alexandra.
The lifestyle is just sitting around with guys and talking, drinking beer and having fun. We then drink umkomboti, that's a traditional beer. We then dance traditional songs. So it's basically not planned. It can be different for every tour.
Dutch tourist Fritzie van den Boom says touring Alex on a bike is one of her top 10 experiences.
It's been very good, and that is mainly because of the people. From the very beginning, I noticed a difference with Dutch people, that South Africans are generally more generous and hospitable, so I felt very welcome.
Mulaudzi says his clients react differently to tasting local fare, such as roasted chicken feet and heads, called walkie-talkies in the township.
American would be like, interesting. That's usually the Americans say about the taste. Interesting. So you don't know exactly what they mean. Is it nice? Is it bad? Is it okay? Is it not okay?
He says he's taken top international business people on tours, airline pilots, Olympic athletes, and none have been targeted by criminals. Some are now regular clients, like the Spanish male model who once insisted on taking beer from a tour back to his fancy hotel.
He carried three of those bottles back to his hotel. And you know this classy hotel that they go into. Everyone was just looking at him weird, and he was like, sharp, sharp. Sharp, sharp is how we usually greet people in the township.
And then, says Mulaudzi, there was the recent case of the disappearing Dutch woman. After a long search, he found her in a very surprising place.
Oh, this lady was in Shek, and she already found a boyfriend.
Very good potential marketing. Yes.
Jeff Mulaudzi, ex-bike thief and poor township kid, says he's now living his dream with a greater vision of one day owning a big truck transport company. But bicycles, he says, will always be special to him. Darren Taylor for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
On Straight Talk Africa. How do you think Africa fared at the 2016 Rio Olympics? Shaka Sali and his guests will review the 2016 Olympics. That's next on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.